Marketing is hard. But I'll tell you a little secret. It doesn't have to be. Let me point something out. You're listening to a podcast right now, and it's great. You love the host. You seek it out and download it. You listen to it while driving, working out, cooking, even going to the bathroom. Podcasts are a pretty close companion. And this is a podcast ad. Did I get your attention? You can reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Libsyn Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a pre-produced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience in their favorite podcasts with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com, that's L-I-B-S-Y-N, ads.com today.
Welcome to Act 3, the podcast where we explore how to thoughtfully shape the rest of our lives. I'm your host, Kara Gray. This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my third act consultancy, where I help executives and professionals with a plan to intentionally design the rest of their lives. For more information, stay tuned until the end. Today, I am joined by someone whose career and current work I deeply admire, Rashad Tabakawala. Rashad spent nearly four decades at Publicis Group, one of the world's largest communication and marketing organizations, where he served as chief growth officer and chief strategist. Along the way, he was named by Business Week as one of the top business leaders for innovation, honored by Time Magazine as one of the five marketing innovators, and inducted into the Advertising Hall of Fame. But what's even more interesting is the work that he's doing now as what he calls a company of one. Rashad helps people and organizations see, think, and feel differently about growth through his speaking, advising, and writing. His best-selling books, Restoring the Soul of Business and Rethinking Work, have become touchstones for leaders navigating change. He also publishes a widely read thought letter called The Future Does Not Fit into Containers of the Past, and hosts the What's Next podcast. Today, we'll talk about his transition from corporate life into independent practice, his insights on the future of work, and what it means to stay human and relevant in times of transformation. Rashad, welcome to Act 3.
Thank you very much, Kara. I'm glad that we're talking about Act 3, which means I've got one more act, because this might be Act 2 for me.
Yes, indeed, indeed. You spent quite a few years at Publicis, eventually serving as chief strategist and growth officer. When you look back, what was the most important lesson that shaped how you think about leadership today?
I would say the single biggest lesson about leadership is that leading is not about zone of control. It is about zone of influence. And leading is actually not a role, but a way of being. A manager or a boss is a role. Leading is a way of being, and that the best leaders simultaneously are reinventing themselves and their companies, but most importantly, attracting, training, and building talent around them.
Wonderful. Being named to the Advertising Hall of Fame is a rare honor. What did that recognition mean to you personally? And how do you think about legacy from that part of your career?
Well, it's a big deal because in the 74 years, so this year they'll announce in about a month or so, at the end of this month or very early next month, the 75th class of this. So it's been around for 74 years. And in 74 years, they've only selected about 290 people. Yeah. So, and in the company that I worked at for my entire career, which is the Publicis Group, only five people have ever received that award. One being the founder of Publicis, one being the 40-year chief executive officer, or who was for 40 years the chief executive officer, a gentleman called Maurice Levy. Right. So to be sort of in their company, but also in the company of Leo Burnett, the man whose company I joined, or other people, is a big deal. For me, in addition to that being a very big deal, there's also a slight other interesting thing, which is I was the first person in the service industry who comes from South Asia. So there have been a couple of others inductees from South Asia. Indra Nui, who used to be the CEO of Pepsi,
right,
is one of the, and this year there were two of us. One is the CMO and EVP of MasterCard, Raja Rajaraman, and myself. But Indra and Raja worked on the client side, and I was the first sort of services side, you know, from sort of South Asia. So that was interesting. And in an odd thing, which I hadn't thought about, is even though digital has been a big deal to our industry, it was only this year that they inaugurated or they brought in people with sort of digital pedigree. Now, I have enough analog pedigree before I did digital. But this year they had myself and the late Susan Wojcicki of YouTube, right? So for me, it was kind of unusual in that, A, it's obviously a very august group of people. But second is I'm sort of the pioneer in the services from South Asia and in the pioneering class of people with digital backgrounds.
Two big things that point to your legacy and your work. Yeah, that's incredible. In 2019, you stepped away from corporate life to build this next chapter on your own. What surprised you most about this transition?
There were two or three things that sort of surprised me. The first one, which was a very positive surprise, was how I had actually planned well for it, so it was seamless. And part of the reason it was seamless is I wanted to leave a couple of years earlier, and I'd been planning for that. But my management, and one of the reasons I was also moving, was I had thought in my mind that every career has a midnight hour and the smart people leave at 5 to 12. So when people still like you, you need to go do your next thing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Go out while you're on top.
And I had used the occasion of my CEO becoming the executive chairman and a new CEO coming in to say, okay, this is the good time to do it. And the incoming CEO and the outgoing CEO and now the executive chairman, now chairman emeritus, basically suggested to me that that wasn't ideal for them, that they needed me to be around for two more years. And we sort of agreed on a transition plan where I did 1 year full-time, 1 year half-time, and then started doing other things. That allowed me to actually not have to go cold turkey.
Yeah.
Right. And it also enabled, because I extended sort of my exit, I was fortunate that Publicis kept me around as an advisor after I left, which basically meant it signaled to everybody that I was in good standing. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
So, you know, when you go from a very powerful job in a company of 100,000 people to a one-person job, one of the challenges is people wonder what went wrong.
Yeah. Yes. They always assume something's gone wrong.
So the whole thing is something's clearly gone wrong. Rashad had this big job and now he's sitting by himself at home. Like, what happened? Okay. And this helped offset that, which is, okay, this guy is going slowly, step by step by step. He's still staying connected. So clearly this is his next act and it's not, he's been tossed out. Does that make sense?
Right.
And that becomes very, very important, primarily because you don't have to spend a whole bunch of time explaining what's going on. So one was, it turned out to be easier than I thought in the transition, primarily because my, you know, ex-bosses made sure that I didn't fail, right? And part of it is because I also thought that one, they liked me, but the other is I had been so connected with the company that having me fail would not look good for them.
That's
so
right.
It was less about me, but it was like, hey, we can't make this guy who probably is full of, doesn't know how to do anything. We have to make sure we have some scaffolding around him before he falls. So that was the very positive surprise. There wasn't a negative surprise, but I had prepared for the negative, and this is the negative that people don't realize. So outside of the fact, let's suppose you leave very elegantly like I managed to do.
Yeah.
Okay. There are still a lot of shocks. And this, my wife had basically told me for 2, 3, 4 years, saying, what the hell are you doing and why are you doing what you're doing? Right? And so she basically said, make sure you know what the hell you're doing. So what I did was I started reading books about something I wasn't exactly doing, but it would, may have felt like that. So I started reading a lot of books about retirement. Okay.
Yeah.
And there's a particular book. It's called Retirement and Its Discontents, which is a book I recommend to everybody. It's just called Retirement and Its Discontents. And it's not one of those books that people actually talk about. And whenever I tell people about it, it's the best book in this subject because it's a very simple book. What this lady does is she follows 5 different people after they've retired for the next year. And the 5 very different professions. So there is a teacher, a construction worker, a CEO of a company, a doctor, and there's like a 5th other. So 5 very different, white collar, blue collar, you know, teacher, right? So a teacher, construction worker, doctor, CEO of a company, right? All these different people. And what came out of there, and this is a key thing I will always advise people when they're doing second acts or third acts, is when you have a full-time job, which may be your first act, you think one of the things that the job provides you, and which is very important, is income. And you kind of solve for that, which is clearly when I was doing the second thing, I had to make sure that if my second act turned out to be useless, that I could still pay my bills and all of that kind of stuff. So I said, okay, the income thing, if that goes to like very bad, it's okay. Right. And I was fortunate after 37 years of working in a company, I could say that's going to be okay.
Yeah.
But what this did and what my wife actually mentioned, she has just said one thing. She says, who's going to talk to you? That was her whole question. Who's going to talk to you? And what she meant that by that was something very different, which is what the book shows. So while a job gives you income, it also gives you identity.
That's right.
Because they ask you. It gives you community because you, even if whether you like them or you dislike them, you're hanging around with people at work and your partners and suppliers and clients, right?
That's right.
Third is it gives you a sense of purpose. You get up in the morning. And finally, even though the people at work can be like soap operatic people and full of drama, it gives you a sense of growth because people basically say like, you suck, et cetera, right? You have to do something about them. And so to me, it was like, how do I make sure I offset those? So I did a lot of planning to make sure that, okay, what do you do? I said, I'm now an author. So I had a book coming out. So so I could say, look, I'm an author, right?
So you solved for identity.
By staying connected to Publicis, I kept my community while developing a new community.
Yeah.
That made sense?
Yeah.
And then I found ways on purpose and growth. But that's what people forget. And so that was my second sort of learning. And so both were like things that could have gone wrong, but one, my company and B, my wife basically prepared me. So I was less shocked. But a lot of people do get shocked when they basically recognize. And the third, which I did not have a problem with for a different reason, and I realized I was an exception. So a lot of people, including a lot of my very senior colleagues, as they were leaving, outside of having the shock number one and shock number two, they had a third shock. And the third shock is the one that is most hurtful to people. And it did not happen to me. One, because I prepared for it. And then I was unique in a particular way, not completely unique, but unique. Which is when people are calling you and you're really popular, it's not you. It's the title and the budget you control. And the day you don't have the title and the budget you control, very few people call you.
That's right.
Right? And so what basically happens is that's the thing that's most hurtful to people.
Yeah.
And in my particular case, because in the years that I was, the final 5, 6 years I was in the company, I myself controlled no budgets nor controlled any clients. And so I was living basically on my own, I mean, obviously working with the group, but I was living on my own thinking. Like I was writing, speaking, etc. So that continued. So if people basically said, you never had any budgets at the end and you never had any power at the end, but you used to speak and you used to write and you're still speaking and writing. And that's what we liked about you. And you still do speaking and writing, but now you can speak and write on anything, including not being limited to your company, right? But right. To me, I was fortunate by some combination of these three things to avoid what I see happening all the time, which is you leave inelegantly. You think you solve for your income, but then you have this identity, community, growth, and purpose problem. And then you get an entire shock when your friends were friends of the money you controlled and not you.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, how fortunate that you have a lovely wife who really helped you, you know, think through a lot of that.
I had good bosses, a lovely wife, and a little bit of luck, but it's very, very difficult. This transition tends to be difficult. I also had, unfortunately or fortunately, a lucky strike extra, which is a horrible thing happened. But what happened was 6 months after I stopped working, quote unquote, so at a job, COVID happened.
Yeah.
So everybody was working from home. So I wasn't looking odd. Does it make sense?
Yeah, everybody was in the same
situation. And I was set up to do that. Right.
Fantastic.
So that was a tragedy that turned out to be helpful, but it was a tragedy.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I mean, well done on all of this. This is exactly what I help my clients through. But you managed to sort this out on my own, which doesn't surprise me from what I know about you. Your thought letter, your weekly newsletter, is read by over 30,000 people.
Yeah.
What inspired you to start it, and what have you learned about building an audience this way?
Sure. So what got me to start it was a combination of me deciding that I was an author. Remember, so my first book came out in February of 2020, so 1 month before COVID, closed things down. My book comes out in February of 2020, and I now then decide when people are going to ask me, I'm an author.
Okay? Yeah.
And then COVID happens, and I tend to like trying and experimenting with new things. You know, I remind people that my email is my first name at gmail.com, which meant I was early on Google, right? My X handle is
nice.
Rashad, which was, I was early on Twitter.
Yeah.
Which is now X.
Early adopter.
Right. So I began to see, and obviously as an aspiring author, I benchmarked against great writers.
Yep.
And I noticed that one or two of them were doing this thing called a Substack.
Mm.
Right? So my old stuff is like, these people are really good. What the hell is a Substack? So I went and saw it. And I was saying, you know, maybe this is the future of writing versus a book. Okay. And how does the economics work? And the economics of Substack is you can use all the technology. And Substack is really three things. It's basically an email system, a publishing system, and a billing system. And if you decide you can use the entire technology for free till you decide to charge, and then you end up paying, you know, 10% plus 3% for Stripe and 10% to them. But I said, look, if I charge for free, I could use their technology for free. And who's going to pay for me anyway? So I said, let me write a Substack. So I basically said, let me try one. But I said, who's going to read it? So I went on to social media and I said, I'm going to start a Substack. It's called The Future Does Not Fit in the Containers of the Past. And it's going to be bohemian and eclectic. And I don't know anything else. And so I left it at that. And I eventually, in about 2 weeks, had 400 people sign up for this unknown thought letter, which had this title. And so one Sunday, I said, okay, I better write something. So I did. Which is in August of 2020. And about 60% of the people opened it. And I got like 20 emails back saying, this is really good. We hope to, looking forward to seeing it next Sunday. I had no idea that I was going to write every week. I thought I was just experiment. So I said, okay, next Sunday is coming. I better write something. And that is the thing that eventually happened. So what have I learned? And then I've never charged. what I've learned are the following three things. So anybody who wants to write on a Substack or a Beehive or whatever it is, the three lessons. Lesson number one is if you decide to do it, you have to be consistent. Otherwise, I mean, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to be consistent. But consistency becomes very important if you wish to build an audience. If you just want to like write, you don't have to worry about it, right? But you need consistency. So one is you have to be consistent. The second is if you decide to charge, and I'm not charging, mm-hmm. right? Be ready to lose 90% of your audience.
Yeah.
Okay. Only 10% of your audience is willing to pay. The other 90% will not pay. And if you decide that they have to pay, you're going to lose 90% of your audience. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of a second one. The third one is in order to stay fresh, try not to write about the same thing again and again. Okay. So I have some people who I subscribe to and I've stopped subscribing to because they're one-trick ponies. And I've already heard what you've got to say, and you're saying it again and again and again and again and again, right?
Yeah.
What I basically said was I'm going to write every week on a different topic. And I'm not going to write completely on a different topic, but over time, I've identified at least 12 to 14 different things I write about. Mm-hmm. And that can be as different as how to sell better, to how to manage a career, to what is wisdom, to the importance of poetry, right?
Yeah.
And that ended up being really cool, which was like, and then I don't write about news or politics because people are covering news and politics. So what I began to realize is people like having something that's eclectic coming every Sunday. It's free, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then I also lucked into, in most cases, adding imagery. So I would like add photography, either mine or other people's, or art, right? And which matched the sort of the writing. So some of my readers would say, I've got art, can you feature my art? Okay.
Yeah.
So it became, and over time, that consistency is built to, you know, 30,600 and something, you know, readers.
Yeah.
And it has actually done two things. So people, a lot of people say, look, this stuff is really good. How come you're not charging? Right. And there are two reasons I don't charge. One, very, very importantly, and I realize I'm really lucky, I don't have to.
Yeah.
Right. I spend a lot of money subscribing to people who are writing on Substack.
Yeah.
and my old stuff is like, more power to you. I want to like underwrite your writing. Yeah. I don't have to. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm fortunate in that area, which is very, very important, that you don't have to. And so I said, look, I don't have to, therefore I'm not charging. Okay. But so the people say like, well, what about monetization? I said, not everything in life is monetization. So don't worry about it.
Right.
But actually, it's turned out to be very, very good for three reasons I remind people about. One is it's amazing to basically stay top of mind. So people realize I'm still alive. Okay. So is Rashad around? Well, he wrote on Sunday. So unless there's some machine writing it, or he's pre-written all of this, which you can schedule. He seems to be alive. He's writing. Okay. That's number one. Number two, it significantly builds my brand because people say,
that's right.
Not only is he alive, but he apparently hasn't completely lost it. He still has some interesting things to say. Right. But third, it builds my brand and has supported my speaking business, right?
Yep.
And given me the idea for my second book. So in effect, what basically happened is it's turned out to be massively interesting as a business, though I don't charge for it.
Right. But it's leading to other things for you, it's interesting for you.
It's interesting for me. So, and the other one is you have to like really work at it. So, you know, the quality of what I do, it takes you 6 minutes for most people to read on a Sunday.
Yeah.
It takes me between 2 and 4 hours to write.
Yeah.
Okay. And so my thing is that, look, if you want to do a Substack versus just being an experiment, be consistent, work really hard at it, and recognize that as you put it out, people are sort of deciding whether you're good or not based on what you're writing. And if you just want to like have a fun thing, like very erratic, fine, that's perfectly fine. But that's what people will think, that you're like a quirky person, which is fine if that's what you want to be positioned as. And or like once in a while you feel like writing, or you know, it's like you're just sort of, you know, posting at home versus actually doing anything. Because I remind people I'm actually charging people a lot. And they say, like, what? So I says, I'm charging Kara 6 minutes of her time every weekend.
Right.
Okay. And she could do a lot of other things with 6 minutes. So she's giving me 6 minutes. And in many cases, people say, we give you more than 6 minutes, you fool. Because sometimes we have to think about the shit you've written, right? Either because you said stupid shit and we wonder how horrible you are, or if you've said good stuff and we have to think about it. And so it ends up being like we mull over it for 25, 30 minutes. So yeah, you've like infected our minds for 25 to 30 minutes. That's a huge cost, right? Yeah. Versus charging, whatever, $5 a month.
Yeah. Yeah. So beyond the weekly newsletter, you're also doing a podcast. You have a lot of projects going on. You're doing speaking. I'm not sure if you're doing any client work still, but what is bringing you the most, what's lighting you up the most in your work world right now?
So what I get a lot of pleasure from are three things that are interrelated, which is making, building, and teaching. And making is I create content, which is I have book one, book two. Mm-hmm. I have a Substack, as you rightfully indicated. I have a podcast called What Next? And I recently, 14 weeks ago, so today was the 14th episode, I've launched a YouTube show called The Rethinking Work Show. Right.
Okay.
Where I talk to people, the people can find that at rethinkingwork.io. Just look at show or look at YouTube, and it's also on Spotify. It's a Rethinking Work. Where I talk to different people inventing the future of work. What Next? I talk to different people about what's next in different industries. Right. So in effect, that's where I am making. Does that make sense? So
I'm
making content, making a podcast. I'm building in that each of these things become bodies of work. Right. So I have 263 Substacks, two books, 150 podcasts, now 14 shows. Right. So I'm building. But in the end, the pleasure comes from actually generously teaching people. So, and there, whether I'm speaking, right, or I'm advising, I don't consult as much as I advise. I sort of teach. But the combination is because I write and I think and I produce and I talk to different people, I'm building content, I'm building thought. I'm making and I'm teaching. So it's this very interesting and a key thing. And so it looks like there's a lot of stuff because I have a weekly podcast, a weekly show, a weekly Substack. I, you know, this year have spoken in 70 different places. And I've flown 70 times, if that makes sense. But so all of that feeds on each other, but and it's the same one person. It's just me doing it. But it's not just me because I'm plugging and playing with other people. So like my Rethinking Work show is actually produced by one of my daughters, who's a filmmaker. What Next podcast is produced by the Publicist Group. So it's What Next with Me, but it's produced by the Publicist Group. I write my own Substack, but all the underlying technology is my Substack. I write my own books, but I have an agent, I have editors, you know, HarperCollins, et cetera. So it looks like it's one person, but there are teams. So the difference is, look, I work with a lot of amazing, talented people who help me put the stuff together. The only difference is nobody's on my payroll. They all get paid, right?
But not by you.
Right? They either get paid by somebody else, or if I pay them, like I have a world-class designer who does my website. Okay, yeah. Who's very senior at Publicis, who does this on the side. Okay, I basically say, can you do this? And they send me a bill and I'm done. But they're not on my payroll. So when I need something, it gets done. So the whole idea is, obviously, everybody who works with me are really good and they get paid when they, right, or in some way or the other. But but they're not on my payroll. So my whole thing is, yes, I'm a company of one in the fact that the payroll is only me, right? But I'm a company of many in that I work with talented people. Otherwise, how could I achieve anything I do? You know, those are the things. And why that's really important, at least in our stage, you know, as you advise and consult with your clients, is there are three things happening all at the very same time, which is one of the reasons I've also become popular with a particular group of people, which I call the seasoned ones. Instead of calling us aged or old, I call us the seasoned ones.
Yes.
So their old stuff is like, how did you pull this shit off? Like, because most people, what they do is they stop and then nobody calls them and then they... And you know, some of them are very happy just reading and playing golf, but others say, how much can we just do that?
Yeah.
Right? Everybody's got different things. So there's stuff like, how did you pull this off? And I said, well, I kept learning, yep. Right? And I realized it was a different stage and a different thing. So I wasn't going back to saying, well, in the days of publicists, I used to do that. Well, those were those days. That was fantastic. That career I did with the bow, now I've got something different. Of course, I'll use some of that thinking and learning, but I'm not doing that. So I don't like go back and try to like relive that today, right?
I think that's key. Yeah.
It's a key thing. And so I sort of look forward. But more importantly is this, you know, I once wrote a piece, which you may have read, sort of built off the song by, you know, Bob Dylan that Joan Baez actually sang best, which is Forever Young. Okay. Yeah. And in there, I give a lot of advice to people who are of the seasoning. And I say, you know, on Arthur C. Clarke's grave, who wrote 2001 Space Odyssey, are the lines on his grave, so his epitaph, is Arthur C. Clarke, so into so-and-so. He was always growing, he never grew up. Right? And so when somebody basically says, you know, I'm like 70 years old or 50 years old or 40 years old and I'm too old to do stuff, I said, give me a break. As long as you've got I'm living, you can keep learning and growing. Right?
That's right.
And if you stop doing that, you've already died. It doesn't matter. You can be 25 years old and stop learning. You're more dead than a 75-year-old who's learning.
That's right. That's exactly it. Rashad, this has been really fun to talk to you today. Thank you so much for your time. Is there a repository of all things Rashad at RashadTobaccoWala.com? Is that best place? Yeah, where can people find you?
So, you know, if people basically go to RashadTobaccoWala.com and then they click around, they'll see my podcast and they can go, they'll see my Substack newsletter. The only thing they won't see, because I have a different site for my, they'll see my new book, but yeah. I've got this other separate freestanding site called RethinkingWork.io. Okay. So rethinkingwork.io will give you the whole world of the future of work, everything else, including, by the way, the Rethinking Work book is on my original website. And from there, you can actually end up in the other thing. So yes, go to rashadtobaccoWala.com, look at podcast, look at Substack, and look at book, and that'll take you everywhere. And outside of the book, everything else is free, right?
Wonderful.
So there's no cost, no advertising, no anything. And the book's about $20. So hopefully you can afford that.
Yes. Well, thank you so much again. I think this is going to be great for my listeners. Really great advice, great inspiration in creating a life that where you're still learning and growing and doing things that light you up. So thanks so much again, Rashad.
Welcome, Kara. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Good Morning Freedom, my consulting practice. I help executives, professionals, and business owners plan the non-financial part of their third act, like how to discover new purpose and how you want to spend your time. I offer a one-on-one third act blueprint package where we work together to discover some new avenues for exploration in your next chapter. My work with you is completely custom and will provide you with a ton of resources and support as you transition to this new stage of life. Don't miss the opportunity to intentionally design the rest of your life. For all the details, please go to goodmorningfreedom.com.